Okay, welcome back everybody to another episode of GCC Tech Talks by 70 Experts. Here as always with my co-host Sai. And we're going to dive into the world of governance, privacy, and probably a bit of security when it comes to AI and data policy work. So on the show, we've got Don O'Shaughnessy, who both Sai and I know. We've met once before. You guys worked together. But Don, it's awesome to have you on the show. Thanks for coming.
Fantastic to be here. Yeah.
Good.
So
Finally.
Well, you got me at the right timing.
Yes. Yeah, where there's like a small window of when you can finish work and record.
If you give me
something
too long, I'm going to have to say, no, something will come up.
Yeah. Well, we've managed to get him on that window. So we've probably got 30, 45 minutes to dive into your brain a little bit. And I think it's probably a conversation we've had a couple of times around governance, but at a very high level at this point. So what we usually do with our guest on is just a little bit about you, kind of, you know, you personally, but also how did you get into the world that you're working in now and what you're doing a little bit, and how did you, I guess, bring yourself to the region as well?
Your biography, but keep it brief.
Yeah.
Keep it brief. Oof. I've had about five different lifetimes at this point. Yeah. I've had about five different career plans that didn't work out, and then I've ended in this one, which is what I seem is very, very the normal trajectory for J-Governance, J-Privacy, AI. So I went off getting a sports route first, then had to have a background because of an injury, and went down a legal route where I was working at a bank, as all ex-rugby players do, working in banks. Then GDPR came up. I took over the GDPR project. There's one Bank of Ireland, one of the biggest banks in Ireland. And with that, I was going through what would actually happen when GDPR was come in. So that was looking like, okay, who could we hire, who could we fire, who could we upskill? What contracts would need to change? What do we need to upskill people? What new resources? What and new teams do we have to build? All this. And then delivering that to the exco and tell them everything we have to go. Then from there, got headhunted again, again, again. Then found myself over in the Middle East because my wife, like all the men I followed my wife, she told me, I'm going over here now, so you come with. I came over here, became global GPO for a law firm out here, a Swiss law firm actually, and then was dealing with them for a good while. After I finished with them, one of the things about data privacy and data governance is if you finish putting all the frameworks in place at some point, which you never really, really finish, but you will come to a stagnant point, then if you don't move shop or move to another company, unless you can go a couple directions higher or unless your organization is big enough, you need to leave to grow. And you have to understand that it's your time to actually leave. So I made that decision, wasn't an easy one to make. And then I moved on to another company, also in the Middle East, and then others, dealing with government entities, dealing with fintechs, dealing with investment banks, dealing with technology companies. And yeah, going through all their data governance, between getting companies ready from scratch, between getting companies IPO ready, between getting companies ready for PPL over in Saudi Arabia, and PPL here, and over in DIFC, and talking them of what they can and can't do. So yeah, it's been a long, long ride.
It's like a whirlwind career.
Yeah, and so, it doesn't stop.
So go back then. So rugby player, what position?
Oh, prop.
Prop, okay, good lad.
He's a big lad.
Yeah.
So you went for prop, then you went down the legal route. Did you study... Were you studying law while playing rugby, or was that literally rugby career finished,
law while playing rugby.
Okay.
Yeah, so when I finished with that, because my guy was like, look, you're not going to become a professional rugby player, and if you do, then that's going to be your full life for maybe 10 years. Mm. So you need to have something good. Thankfully,
he had a smart head on him, just a good backup.
Yeah. He was like, you do this, you stay under my gaze. Yeah. So something I plan to do with my kids.
Good. Yeah. And what sort of law sector, what were you studying when it came to law? Because obviously it's quite a broad subject.
So I was struggling to be a barrister.
Yeah. Oh, really?
So, okay. Yeah. So the reason I actually didn't go again full barrister track was because when I actually qualified, it was during the recession in Ireland, biggest recession ever, and credit crunch. So for the first time ever, there was actually more people leaving the bar than going into it. So I met with a couple of judges, met with a couple of senior partners, and they were like, unless you have a load of family money or your father's a judge, then this is going to be a hard road for the next 5 to 7 years. And I said, no, thank you. I would like to make some money, if you don't mind. Yeah. So then went this way And it all comes back to my dad, actually. He always pointed out to me of one of the things you need to find is a niche.
Yeah.
So when I saw their privacy niche coming out, I was like, this is never going away. Because of how the whole way it came about, of being enshrined with privacy rights of humans, and that's how the whole thing evolved from. So with that trajectory, I was like, this is going to be a niche I'm going to dive into. There are so many different pockets around this niche for governance. AI has been around for a long, long time, a lot longer than most people think. Okay. But it wasn't at the forefront there, where she came into about 5-6 years ago to be really in the forefront. Just after COVID, when ChatGPT went really live. And before that, it was just really RPA. People thought it was AI, but it's not AI.
I mean, there was body shops, covered as AI.
I still have to deal with a lot of them and going, okay, when you say AI, what do you think you mean? Yes, you mean automation. Yeah, you do not mean AI. Someone has sold you AI, and I'm here to dash your dream.
Yeah, really sorry about that. And I know you've got business case and you've convinced the board, but what you've bought is not what you think it is.
We can still call it AI, but as long as everyone knows it isn't. And now we don't have to worry about your data as much. Because it's automation.
Okay, so rugby, barrister, short stint of trying to be a barrister, down the data privacy DPO type route.
Yep.
When did you move to the Middle East? Did you come straight to Dubai? Because I know you said you did Saudi.
Yeah.
You went to Dubai first, then
straight to Saudi.
Okay, straight to Saudi.
Straight from Dublin, finished off a GDPR project, got GDPR installed for one of the companies there within 6 months, which is impossible to do, except for the fact they were a brand new shop.
Yeah.
They'd set up, there was no legacy issues, there was no bad data issues, there was nothing wrong. So I had to just draft up policies, train up the DPO, trunk board, make sure everything was in place for consents, for the rights, for the breaches, and then just keep everything going from there, make sure they had the rope bars, all this type of stuff. And if they weren't in a new shop, it would have been impossible. So on the 28th of May 2018, so just after it went live, I left Europe and came straight over here. And then found myself with a European company.
Hey, to Dubai though, to Dubai.
Yeah,
Dubai,
straight to Dubai. Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, good.
But coming over here and dealing with a European company for GDPR was an interesting one, because what happened with a lot of companies for GDPR being put in was you had a lot of consultants that didn't know what they were doing, and even small like firms that didn't know what they were doing. So they came in, they said, oh, we'll put it in place. But the people who hired them didn't actually know how to really check to see what they were doing. So then you have people like me who actually knew what was going on and going, okay, cool. They drafted you a policy, which now you're actually worse off having because you have nothing else to back up the policy. So you effectively have been given, instead of saying we're ignorant of this, you now have a policy that says we cannot abide by this. Please put a claim against us. Yeah. So this is what happened. And a lot of companies got a little bit scared of this. Yeah. Of they feel like they were taken for a con, which some of them were. So they're a little bit hesitant to jump on going, oh, so you're an expert. Can you really do it?
And then so it feels like a lot of your role is education.
Gaining trust.
Yeah, just gaining trust and education purposes. Yeah. Like, I assume you're trying to keep up with the market and the trends and the policies that are coming out from government as well.
Yeah.
Across region.
Yeah.
I was going to ask a question. So where do you, at that point, the maturity was really, really low around data governance, around any sort of governance, shall we say. Where do you feel it is now in the Middle East? Do you feel it's got better, worse? What's your opinion around that?
Oof, that's a big one. How honest are we meant to be here?
we like an honest
podcast. Yeah, honest.
Okay. Without going too scathing.
Yeah.
Okay, so one of the issues you have is, so you have the DIFC. So we'll go data privacy first, okay? And then we'll go get it.
And feel free to explain different areas, because not everyone, I'm not a data privacy person, obviously.
Okay, so
you're talking as if you know it. Talk as if we don't know it.
So data privacy, which is literally the law of what you can do for your data, any information that identifies you, directly or indirectly. This literally means anything from your name, your social security numbers, to what height you are, your hair color, anything like this, okay? Where your country of origin is, okay? These are things that are grouped together. They can identify you as an individual. On their own, they can be aggregated and not identify you as an individual. That's a little bit too much to dive into in such a short amount of time. But what you have of all the different data laws across the world, they all, unfortunately, are all off GDPR, which isn't actually a silver bullet. Mm. There was a lot of issues with GDPR. One of the big ones being where a lot of laws have come out is the rulemaker is going to actually give out the guidance in time. So it becomes to the courts or some type of precedent to be set on them. And when that happens, the backtrack of that is very, very different. Because those floodgates have been opened, and once they're open, the floodgates, especially when it comes to claims, are going to close. So you've had some really, really silly ones for GDPR around even emotional distress, all this, of like there was one, I can't even remember the country, it was to do with she had a photo taken around her for a wedding dress, she wanted to sue a photographer, put the image up on his website, and she was claiming emotional distress, and she actually got a claim for it. So like that should never happen. Yeah, ever. That's absolutely insane. Some people will say it isn't. I personally would, because it opens the floodgates. So with that, you have different laws. Then you have the Moving China, which you have 10 different, at that point in time, this is a couple of years ago now, 10 different documents that were making up the regime of data privacy. Dealt with all of them. Then you have over here, you have PDPL. You also have PDPL over the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia.
Explain what that is. What does that stand for?
Personal data protection law. Yeah, so you have the UAE one, which gets a little bit more confusing. The UAE, because you have what are called free zones. Sorry, I don't know if that made a difference hitting the mic. So you have what are called free zones. So there's many different types of free zones. The two primary ones are DIFC, which is Financial Hub in Dubai, and the other free zone, which is ADGM, Abu Dhabi Global Markets, which is a free zone in Abu Dhabi. Now, they are like, they're almost like papal states, like a Vatican is in Rome. They have their own powers, they have their own laws, they have their own everything. So they have privacy laws within them. GIFC more closely follows GDPR, whereas Abu Dhabi Global Markets more closely follows CCPA, which is the American side. Within that, those laws are working and those laws are functional. And you need to abide by those laws. Then you have the online mainland law, which is PDPL. That came into force, oh my God, I think it might have been 22, when it actually came in with 23. But the problem with that is it's an enacted law that's actually unenforceable because there's a article in the law that a cabinet needs to be put in place. And then 6 months to a year after that cabinet is in place, additional guidelines will be put in place for that. And then the law should go live. So they've enacted a law that now doesn't have any enforcement. So that's an issue that needs to be resolved to make it really, really stick. And the whole reason for doing these laws is the same reason for anything else, economical. Yeah. You want to build in trust. You want to build in trust in the state. You want to build in trust in the region that we take your data, we take it very serious. There's a lot of data flowing around here. Facial recognition is everywhere here. We have our Emirates IDs, which have everything, and everyone has your Emirates ID. From a Deliveroo driver nearly to any time you've ordered even like chapstick.
Yeah. A lot of lipstick.
I was just thinking my lips are dry. Yeah. But yeah.
So you're right. Like, you know, I have delivery or pick something up and it's everything. You know, stick your Emirates ID card in a machine. There you go, you got my details.
And it has everything.
Has everything. Yeah. It. Yeah.
It's basically you're walking around with a little plastic passport.
So then that, two questions. First, where do you tend to sit in an organization? Because there's obviously data and when you two have worked together, Psy was leading data platforms and, you know, data from a data governance perspective, machine learning, whatever that is. So you're probably working quite closely with data and platform teams. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You're obviously working probably quite closely with general counsel, legal teams, but where does a role for you like sit in the organization?
Advisory. So when you talk about data privacy roles, data governance roles are easy. Mm. Okay. They're in data. Okay. IT roles in IT, in data. Okay. Compliance roles in compliance, legal roles in legal, IT security, it's in security. But when you talk about data privacy, especially, there's a fight of where to put it. It's like an unwanted child.
That's why I'm asking the question.
No one wants to take ownership of it. But you go into so many organizations, it might be illegal, but then they have no one scanning you with data. Yeah. Mm. Then I might be in IT security, but they have no understanding of the legal side of it. Then I might be in somewhere else like compliance or data governance or whatever, but then you're always missing a little bit. So I get thrown into wherever they want to throw me into, unless they haven't decided yet. And if I'm picking it myself, I'll go in between legal and compliance. If there's a data team in there, so you have an IT lawyer, that's very, very important, because at least then I'll go into a lot of places, train them up on what they need to do, create their policies, create their standards, redraft their contracts, all this, put different caveats in place.
And there's one point I wanted to add on that is the DPO cannot be part of the team that processes the AI. Or anything to do with the engineering team at all. So I think he like,
well, I have. Yeah. And I think you'll find all DPOs have. Yeah. At some point.
Technically.
They need to be a step away so that they can actually put those frameworks in place.
Well, the entire thing is we're meant to be independent.
Yeah, independent body. That's what I was going to say. It's an independent body. And I think the problem is, I feel, a legal person doesn't have the knowledge on this side. Mm. So you need the knowledge on this side.
Yeah.
And you also need the legal knowledge as well.
Yep.
And which brings me to my next question. So you described organizations having data privacy policies, procedures in place, but nothing's been done, right? Mm-hmm. I think a good question would be, how would you, if you've got those procedures, say Don's come in, he's drafted you all these policies and procedures, how would you go about now implementing those policies and procedures that you've just drawn up?
Topco, so you have from Topco. If you have your sponsors, your management, your governance teams, all this in place, you'll have ownership and accountability. One of the most powerful policies I ever draft is the ownership policy, data ownership. That's not to do with privacy, it's to do with governance, okay? But that gives me the accountability of, you now know what you're meant to do for custodians, owners, stewards, employees, vendors.
Could we go a little bit more into talking about the data owners, how they come about, where they live in the organization, and how you would go about, I'm going to cheat a little bit here because I know a little bit more, data council. How would you go about setting up a data council within an organization?
Data committee.
Data committee or data council?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So data committee, okay, most important thing is you find your sponsors. So you need to decide where your data committee is going to sit. You can figure out how big your organization is. So if your organization is an enterprise-wide, so there's a couple of organizations making up one bigger organization, do you do an umbrella one where you have it, or even a mothership, where you have one here and then you have a couple of other mini ones and they all feed up? And when I say mini ones, I don't mean working groups. I mean actual mini data committees all feeding up to one executive data committee.
I thought you meant minion then.
Minion. No. These aren't yellow things running around going beep, 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 beep.
Sorry, treats your staff. Come on, minions.
Yeah. I would never do that.
Carry on, sorry, Don.
You pick out who your people are. Now, one of the most important things, as you know, is it cannot just be all data people when you're data committee. If it is, it's a disaster. One of the things you always have to have in your data committee, and it should be within your charter, is you always have guests that you invite in as well. Okay, so marketing, legal, obviously IT is going to be there, obviously governance is there, all this. But you need those outside as well. They, even if they're not going to say anything about your data, the most important thing for them to be there is to understand you will be affected by the decisions we make here. So you identify all who your people are, who your stakeholders are for this, you have them in a meeting. And then with that, you have that they can have representatives as well. And then you have to have caveats around representatives, because you can get some lazy people who say, oh, I'll just always send my representative. Yeah. So with that, then you have your working groups, and your working groups are one tier down. Your governance committee showing me every quarter. Like if it's a month, it's a bit too much. Maybe if you're starting out, it can be a month, but it should really be only every quarter. And then your working groups should meet every month. But that's how you do it from that point. And within that point, they should all have their own data owners. It really depends on the organization, how that's flowing down. Because the word data owner and business owner are very interchangeable. The data owner doesn't have to know anything about data. He just has to be accountable. Yeah. And that word accountable, it's not as scary as everyone thinks. when you say you are accountable for your data, the first thing I always get, and it drives me mental, is we don't do anything with data. We don't have data. So I've actually, this is something I've had to do to a lot of people.
Many times.
Oh, like so many. Like, is.
Can I just show you all the data that you actually have?
No, no, I won't even do that. I'll literally go, okay, so what do you do? What's your processing? And they'll say, oh, well, we collect other people's data for like reporting or something, for example. I go, okay, cool. So you think you don't have any data because they own that data. Exactly. I have a piece of paper. I'll write down 1, 2, 3. This is my data, okay? I'm giving it to you for report. Now you write down ABC. You've created that ABC from my 1, 2, 3. You've now made data. You now own that data. You're an owner of that data. And then it's, oh no. Yeah.
So I've just been through this so many times that I wanted Don to share his experience on it. I also wanted to kind of outline the process and how complicated it is.
Yeah.
And how it spans, if it's an enterprise organization, even a medium-sized organization,
yeah, it spans every single department. Even a small one, even a really, really small one, like 10 people.
Yeah.
You'll have like at least 3 of those 10 people will say, oh, we're going to do anything with JA. That's an IT department.
I know. I think a lot of it stems from just you're not educated in the space. So it's very scary space. Because all you think about when it comes to data privacy is people getting sued, lawsuits, all of this sort of thing. So, you know, when you say you're accountable for data, you know, I think most people's reaction is to stand away unless they've been through that.
If I say you're accountable for this cup, a lot of people will say, no, I'm not. It's just that word accountable, okay? So you can just change your being responsible or just keep it as ownership or your domain. This data is in your domain, therefore excusing your domain and you're like responsible for your domain. Responsible, accountable, exact same words. Sometimes it's less scary.
When it comes now to, I don't know how much you get involved with this. Now we're talking about, you know, sovereignty laws in KSA and here, and you know, we work in data. So you've got organizations that want to move data to the cloud and bring in LLMs and do, you know, natural language questions on data, and PII is involved. I'd love your perspective on how you try and manage that from an organization, because at a top level, you know, you want to be seen doing AI, but when it comes to actually what data can we, are we allowed to actually go and use to go and build an AI capability is probably much more limited than maybe you think, but
it doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to be at all. Okay, so you've got to think to be able to use data. What data do I want to use? Okay, so am I actually using personal data for that personal data? Does it actually need to be the PII? Personal information. Personally identifiable information. I was going with me. Or can I use it in an aggregated way? So I can remove all the identifiers and I can club that together and I can use it as long as it makes sure that it doesn't actually identify any small set of people. Like in a room of 1,000 people, I could, in probably about 5 questions, slim a room down of 1,000 people to maybe 10, just by literally going, how many men are here? That could be half of them. How many of them are over 6 foot? That could be getting out 10% of them. How many of them have blonde hair and then blue eyes? And then now you're going to make maybe 5. Yeah. And that's how quick it is with just those few identifying marks.
How many times has marketers come to you and said, how can we get around this?
Every single day of my life.
Yeah. I was thinking about earlier when he was talking about the committee, and I thought you've got marketing in there. Entire job is to go and identify people.
Every day of my life. Yeah.
Which makes it hard. So, sorry.
Go on.
Even other ones of, dealing with organizations that want to use for facial recognition, okay, and make it mandatory to stop any type of fraud for them entering their premises. So how can we do that? Well, you can't. You can't make it mandatory for this. Yeah, you only have one face, unless you have facial reconstruction surgery, and one thumbprint, unless those thing in Men in Black are real, where you can erase them. But they really want to push it constantly because they care more about the economical value of it, of, oh no, but we're going to save money, we're losing this much in type of revenue sales, whatever, by not having these systems in place. okay, cool, but do you want to actually run that risk, and then explain to them what the real risk is of, once someone finds this out, they'll blow the whistle. When I say blow the whistle, I mean it could be a journalist. That journalist could be from the West. You're over here in the Middle East, which the West likes to push down heavy on the Middle East. Even the Middle East is doing everything right, only 10% wrong, they'll make that 10% seem like 50%. Yeah. And that's is that a risk you want to run, depending on how big your operations are. Yeah. So, like, I've had silly things where I've been in big companies where who's the JIT owner? And the CEO will say, I am. You're the JIT owner for all JIT. Yeah. Okay, we need to have a conversation. That's not how this
works. He's ultimately responsible, but I don't think he's the JIT owner.
No, he's
there
not.
He's, I would say he's responsible for the
enterprise.
Yeah, the enterprise, and to make sure that he puts certain caveats in place.
He'd be useless as a JIT owner. He has too much. He has too many other responsibilities. If it's a 5-man enterprise, 10-man enterprise, 20-man enterprise, fine. Yeah. If it's like a 2,000-man enterprise.
Yeah, that's different. That's very different. Yeah.
Like,
that's
This is much bigger than 2,000. Yeah.
So when do you get involved much with technology transformation? Yeah. And I assume you would. How do you then manage that? Because, you know, I work with a lot of organizations, they want to modernize, but the first thing is, oh, we can't move this data to the cloud, we can't do this. And I'm always kind of wary, is it just an ease so we don't have to go through that process of trying to identify it and mask it and govern it, and then we can move it to the cloud? Or is there a real thing behind it that's actually stopping a lot of organizations in this region moving data to the cloud?
There's nothing really stopping them. Some of it will be the laws, but the actual enforcement things in place for that aren't even there. The audit teams aren't even there coming and check it to really do it. Like, even if you take Microsoft, we've all dealt with Microsoft, okay? Microsoft will say to you, our data center is just here. Guys, how do you back up your data center? Yeah. Well, funnily enough, we have bits and pieces of it all across the world. So we have some in Europe, we have some in America, we have some in here, we have some in the Abu Dhabi one for Dubai here, all this. So therefore, the data center isn't really just here. Data sovereignty is a very, very large and heavy, heavy word to actually implement and keep solid, because one of the things that actually stifles, the intentions are pure, okay? To have the data kept here, like Russia has it, China has it, Saudi Arabia has it for certain, such as locals. And here has it for like health data and all this, especially of locals as well. But the actual gravity of doing that will cripple you. If you were to do it fully, just this, say, this data, now we're removing all the freedom rights to actually share data freely. It's going to cripple you economically because you haven't thought it through. And that's always one of the big issues with policymakers. They haven't really fully thought through. They're like, this is what we want to do. This is what we think is right. This is our rationale. But they may not think about the bigger gravity of it, of, okay, now it also affects A, Y, and C. Like, it's over in Saudi Arabia for PGPL law, for example, they had NGMO, which is the governance standard. Now, PGPL came out, NGMO was out beforehand. They also have for the cybersecurity, I can't remember what it was, but they have that as well. Three different laws. They have three different things for data. They need to be aligned, just as a prime example. But they're not isolated in that. That's across the world. Sure, even now in Europe, you have with the EU AI Act, where they're trying to decide at the moment, okay, should we make this a global act, a global framework? That's never going to happen. That's never going to work. You couldn't do it with GDPR. What makes you think you can do it with this? Yeah.
That leads me to a question that I've been burning to ask you, Don. So with the new AI tools that we've got at hand, especially LLMs, yeah?
Which ones?
I would say the ones that learn, right? Okay. They learn from what you're inferring them to do, right?
Okay.
And the learning is that's my concern. Because obviously AI privacy laws are nowhere near where we are with data privacy laws, yeah? What's your opinion as to where this is going to go? Because I feel that without that learning, the speed at which we are going with AI is not possible, right?
Okay. No.
So if a privacy law was put against that, mm-hmm. and how stringent it is would slow down mm-hmm. growth, yep. should we say, in AI. And I feel as though everyone's going 100 miles per hour because there's nothing there. What's your opinion?
Depends on your region.
Okay, okay, yeah. Okay.
So certain regions like will be a lot lighter. Bigger organizations, I can tell you for a fact, will try those regions more as test pilots to actually do it. Because I've had them reach out to me to say, this is what we want to do. And I'll say, no, don't really want to be involved in that because it's a bit of a poison chalice. You deal with it, it gets found out that it wasn't the best thing to be dealing with, and you were operating on a knife edge. You don't really want to be caught there. Mm. It would be cool to be on a real, real, real edge of innovation, which is what you would be, but you always have to think a little bit more of your career path. In terms of the laws will only stop innovation where it's meant to stop them. So this is the whole reason for AI governance, and especially for ethics, game responsibility. So I've worked with financial institutions that have been dealing with AI, and one of the AI things where they want to have for, they want to basically use AI for cross-selling. So how do you use it in a financial institution or in a healthcare institution for, or even an insurance for cross-selling is to actually use it as an educational model. So to give you financial literacy. So you're saying my profile is this, blah, blah, blah. I'm 38, I'm from Ireland. I have money in X, Y, Z. I'm interested in A, B, C. It creates a model for you of what you actually want to do. And it's showing you financial literacy of, oh, this is what debt is, this is what leverage is, this is what shorting is, this is what futures are, all this type of thing, trades, everything. The real issue there is, at what point does that become independent advice? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When that does, you open up a bit of a Pandora's box. And this is the constant thing with AI. So the reason I go down that road to explain this is because I've dealt with it. I've literally... The more controls you put in place with AI, because you never fully know what AI is really going to spit back out to you. Mm. People will tell you, no, I know exactly. But if you do, then it's not really generative learning.
Yeah.
It's not really telling you something new. It's not really collecting and sourcing and compiling all your data to give a new outlook, a new thought, or some type of innovation. So when you put more and more controls in it, you stop it from being able to think more and more and more. And we've seen, we've all read different studies, we've all read different papers of how you've one AI chatbot, you've given the order to, I don't know, simulate for $10,000. Then it starts doing that, it starts to make more chatbots and somehow escapes the sandbox.
Yeah.
Now, I've not been dealing with any of them, but if those stories are true, which they must be because there's enough of them, then that is a bit scary because your genie is out of the bowl and you're not going to be able to put that back in there.
And how are you thinking about it when it comes to the companies themselves, right? You know, you've seen Facebook and all these organizations being pulled into Congress for, you know, data issues in the past. And now we are flooding these LLMs with all of our business data, pretty much, you know, and it's hard to govern that, you know, some organizations. You know, I work for tech companies where you could download any application and do anything, you know. Financial institutions are much more strict when it comes to that sort of thing. But you've got people behind desks. You have no idea what data they're putting into these LLM systems.
Oh, you've no idea, yeah.
How do you think about that? Or is that something you kind of just know it's happening?
Oh, I think about it constantly. Yeah, because I know what's happening.
Yeah, well, exactly. Everyone knows it's happening.
Literally, of people relying on it and everything. Like, I don't know how many court cases at this point where it's been the council has been relying on what has been literally a fake case that AI has generated. Mm. Or that you have a consultancy firm, which I won't name any of them, obviously, they've put this in, it's been found out by a client that that was actually AI generated just because of silly little markers like the M dash.
I think we all know which one that was. That was all over LinkedIn.
I have no idea what you're talking about. They are outstanding.
No idea what you're talking about, Tom.
Let's not talk about the company. But
they are outstanding. And they learned.
Yeah. No, it's just, it's an interesting world where innovation is, everyone's trying to fast pace it.
Yeah. But if you don't, you're left behind.
You're left behind. But you're also in a region where things like, you know, sovereignty is banded around as a reason not to do stuff. But we do need to be careful with the data that we're working with. And then do you put the teams and the councils in place to make sure, because that then becomes so much to manage. You know, you want one project to say, you know, I'm a motor company. I want to understand my customers and parts and how that translate to warranty documents. So you've got data coming from customers and vehicles, and then you've got unstructured data over here. That then boils into a use case. Then you've got a data team. Then there's a privacy team. Then there's marketing or whoever's involved. It becomes quite a big behemoth, slow process to get some of these use cases delivered, I guess.
Yeah. But with that, it becomes even worse. Because when you start talking about AI with data together, the first thing you talk about is your data quality.
Yeah.
Do you even have any data quality? Or you just want to rush into AI, which most companies want to do because it's a buzzword. If we're not doing AI, oh, we're losing out, the money on table, blah, blah, blah. Well, I'm sorry, guys, but rubbish in, rubbish data equals rubbish out, rubbish AI.
Always.
Yeah. And not many enterprises understand that. Oh, it will only take like 1 year to fix our data. Oh, well, do you even know where to start? Yeah, do you even know what structure, what's on structure? Do you have anything in bronze? Do you even know what type of bronze you're using? Like what your caveat for bronze is? What your caveat for silver is going to be? And then gold is gold. Yeah.
And then we start talking about semantic models, data dictionaries, cataloging, and then that becomes its whole separate thing.
Yeah.
And then, okay, well, where does all that logic live? In which tools? And where's that being processed?
Don't even go to the models and the logic of, okay, you can sign this model now. You do a true conceptual, is it logic, is it physical? Now, have you actually got that map? Do you want to change anything? How are you changing it? It's a whole mess across the board. Yeah. And this is all, it's all back to governance again.
Yeah. It is. I'm going to flip it now. So what would your advice, Don, be to an organization where they want to innovate? They want to go forward, but they're worried about not enough governance or not enough direction in the governance being in place. What advice would you give to them? Because at the moment, they're basically stifling growth. They're stifling progress because they're not sure. They don't know which avenue to go down.
There's a couple of different directions you could take them. One is, what's their data quality like? Do they actually have good data? If they don't, they really have to start there. The next thing is always question the use case. You picked a use case. Is that because a consultancy firm told you this is a use case, this is something you want to do, or you read anywhere from X to Instagram to Substack, anything of this is a use case, I think this will work for our organization. Like, why are you actually doing that use case? That's one. And is it applicable to your organization for the growth you actually want to do? Any innovation you want to do. Then, if they actually really, really do want to do it and their data is all over the place, you can sandbox your data. You can put it into a test environment and you can do it that way. You don't have to use real, raw data. You can take it away, you can remove the markers, the identifiers, all this. Just be smart about it. Have someone come in that isn't going to stifle you, but you have with a lot of legal people. There's a lot of legal people will go, this is the black and white law. Yeah. So you're paying me for my advice. This is my advice. Same thing as the consulting firms. You're paying us for our advice. Here's our advice. Our advice is you can do this. You cannot do that. That's no good to me. You need someone who comes in and goes, I understand what you want to do. I want to question what you want to do. Look, we cannot do it this way. But if we aggregate the data, if we move it around, we get rid of the markers, you can do a different version of it that will work and will give you closer to what you want, because what you actually thought you want was never viable for you. So you always have to just go through the journey with the customer to figure out, is this actually what you want? But that takes a bit of to-ing and fro-ing, and sometimes the customer can be very, very...
There's always a challenge between, I want to see something tangible quickly and you know, is this a real business pain that we're trying to solve for, and can we actually solve it? You know, half probably your work as well at 70 Experts, our company, half our time is spent doing data quality,
yeah.
You know, building those sandbox environments. You know, it's not, a lot of the time companies don't need the shiny AI. Okay, we can build chatbots and stuff, but it's, you spend 2 years doing data quality and stitching data together and getting it in the right formats.
I think start small is probably...
Always.
Yeah. Start small.
Absolutely.
Start really small.
Grows ever so slowly. That use case, strip it down. Divide it into 5 stages. You know, you have a 2-year period over 5 stages. If you accomplish it, I think the best advice I've always given is if you break it down, if you go in the wrong direction, you'll realize sooner and you can change direction. Or sometimes it doesn't work out, Don. We've seen so many times. It's, you know, the vision was this. Vision was A. You get to halfway to A and you realize this, like the vision that we had is not possible with what we've got.
Yes.
And can we get the data to do it? No, it's not possible. Or, you know, it's too expensive is another example as well.
So have you got the resources? Have you actually got technology you need for it? Have you even got the data? Or do you have more data than you actually need? And you could purge some of it out, which is... Purging of data is a whole thing. Why
we'll leave that for podcast number two.
My days, like one of the worst things, you go in and go to your organization. Okay, so talking about your retention archiving processes. What?
Oh God, please, let's.
Let me just leave and start again.
I think life cycle is another one as well. That would be for another episode as well.
Day life cycle.
What industries do you like work? I've got it. What industries do you like working in the most? Because you spent a bit of time in financial services. Yeah. You've worked in government entities. You've worked in other places.
Yeah, I've been with tourism. Been with tourism. Healthcare.
Is there any particular industry you quite enjoy working in, or is they've all got their own?
I think he loved trading. I reckon he loved the trading company that we used to work to.
The trading.
Yeah, you used to love the trading company, didn't you?
I learned a lot there. Yeah, I always say you learn a lot more from things that go wrong than things that go well. Yeah. Yeah.
As long as you learn, Don.
As long as you learn. Other people may not learn with you, but as long as you learn.
Yeah. I've taken something out of this job.
Hang on, it's time for me to leave that job. I already know, look, the funny thing is, across all of this, it's a lot of it is rinse and repeat. No matter the JR you're actually using, a lot of it is rinse and repeat. Yeah, it's finding, especially when you get down to catalogs, you get down to what your actual core data matters, you get down to your CGEs. Well, CGEs are a nightmare. I've gone to banks and I've literally gone to, okay.
Are you talking about custom data platforms or?
No, critical data elements.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It's a good thing we cleared up the acronym.
Yeah. So I've sent people in for CGEs, going to the finance team there and get their CGEs. So what critical data elements they need, that if they didn't have this data, it basically couldn't do anything. If they were not to have these data elements, like such as name, numbers, profit margins, all this type of things, that they wouldn't be able to do anything with. Okay. And generally it should be like 200, maybe 150, maybe 300. Okay. Nothing staggering. I've had people come back with 2,000 to 3,000. I'm like, okay, we didn't understand the exercise. Let's have a workshop. And there'll be people out there listening who go, yeah, we've had that many times too. Yeah.
Okay. So as we wrap up, thinking over the next 12, 18, 24 months, what should businesses and leaders need to be thinking about kind of moving forward? Do you think, you know, any
AI? It's going to be the AI laws, the AI, because look, just follow J privacy laws. Exact same thing is going to happen. Start out in Europe. Okay. Then a push gouge. Exact same thing with AI laws. Now in this region, the Middle East, UAE in particular, they put a heavy onus to be on the forefront of it. So when it's a little bit lax, you can move a little bit quicker. But then when the laws come in, you come in with the laws. Now, they're not doing anything here by means of bad. They just need to make sure, keep an eye on those laws. Those laws could come over here, or we may have pressures on us from other companies, other entities around the world. That's how you bring in business. More and more and more. Mm-hmm. You say, we follow these laws. We have this standing too. Your customers get a safe for those. Everything. So the whole reason why GDPR kept growing and changed a little bit around the world. Mm. Exact same thing is going to happen with the AI laws, AI reform. The only difference ever is really going to be around a penalty. So you have for AI, the EU AI Act of like 35 million or 7% global turnover. But then also for GDPR, you have, what was it, 25 million, 5% global turnover, whichever is higher. Does that translate over here? No. It's not as heavy as the onus over here.
And is your time now spent doing more AI law or still data privacy type work?
It's a bit of everything. At the moment, it's spent a lot more doing gig governance.
I think data privacy is so close to what you do with AI now. It's like hand in hand, isn't it? It's like if you don't have one, you can't do the other. Also, if you did have just AI, you have to have the...
You're exposed.
Absolutely. Hand in hand, I would say.
Unless you're just dealing with figures and stuff that has absolutely no privacy markers, like just numbers.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Or just something else, like looking at landmarks or something like this or something with huge databases. And then, like, you could be fine. Yeah. But it is very, very much hand in hand. But a lot of it is also gay governance. Because you're going in and going... You're actually not AI ready. You actually need the governance pick first. Mm. Now we can slap together your data governance and your AI governance put together.
Yep.
And we'll fix your data. And then from your data, we can get the pipelines ready. We can get the business glossaries ready. We can have your CGEs identified. We can have your catalog there. With that, we can now have your products. With your products, now we can start using for because products can be anything, including like data sets. And then we can start doing your AI. Because now we actually have something to work with. Yeah.
You've got that foundation in place, right?
Yeah.
Now we can build from that. So, and at least again, there's something to work from.
What's your use case? A lot of companies always stick with procurement as one of the core use cases. Yeah, because it just sounds so integral. It's also relatively a lot easier. Yeah.
Amazing. Well, Don, thank you so much.
Thank you.
It's good to get into your brain a little bit when it comes to
all of
this topic.
Yeah.
I think we should carry this on at the restaurant afterwards. Talk a little bit more about this, but no, really appreciate you coming on. It's been awesome.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
Thank you, John. Great. Appreciate you coming on.
Thanks. Good to be back. Cheers, Don.
Cheers.
Thanks, buddy.
Thanks.
Good to see you again. Dropped my phone. Also, this chair, I don't know if you heard it, was so squeaky.
It's very squeaky. I was like, is he farting in that chair?
My chair is perfect. Yeah.
Real, thank you. Conscious, we're 5'2", so all good.
Perfect.
Perfect. Thanks, buddy.